This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry.
12 luminaries for high-performance computing.
HPC Wire's People to Watch list for 2013.
Hello and welcome to a special People to Watch edition of HPC Wire Soundbite for January 25th, 2013, available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research, and for this special podcast, I'm joined by Tom Tabor, CEO of Tabor Communications. Tom, it's great to talk to you again.
Good morning, Addison. Thank you very much.
Now, Tom, People to Watch is always one of my favorite things of the year, but before we get to our whole list of luminaries, another reason you're here with me is not just to celebrate them, but you've got some new announcements from Tabor Communications that are fitting right in with our People to Watch theme.
I do indeed, Addison. Thank you. You know, every year when we do this People to Watch, announce the People to Watch list, it's a very exciting time for us. It allows us to really identify and point out the handful of luminaries in our industry who drive this very exciting and dynamic space. And along those lines and along that theme, we also at Tabor Communications have some very exciting announcements that involved a couple of our members of our team that I think deserve some mention on this People to Watch program. As you know, Michael Feldman has been the editor of HPC Wire for the past 6 years. And recently, Michael was very instrumental in launching a new portal and publication for Tabor Communications, which follows the eco-efficiencies of the data center. And I'm talking about Green Computing Report. Michael will be moving over as managing editor of Green Computing Report, effective immediately.
Fantastic. Michael, I know, really cares deeply about that topic, so great move for him.
Yes, it is. He does, indeed. And with that, you'll be joined by a new partner, and I'd like to introduce to our listeners in the HPC Wire readership audience, Richard Brandt. Richard's on the program with us, but let me just say a few things about Richard, so in the way of introducing him to everyone.
You can let him say good morning. Hey, Richard, thanks for joining us.
I'm very glad to be here. Thanks very much.
Now go ahead and tell us all the reasons why Richard's awesome, Tom.
Thanks, Addison. Richard, for many years, was the editor of Upside Magazine, which was a pretty special publication coming out of the Bay Area during the dot-com era. He also served as technology correspondent for Business Week for approximately 14 years. He's won many national awards. He is the Knight Service Journalism Fellow at MIT, in addition to being a Science Journalism Fellow with the American Association for the Advancement of Sciences. Richard has a degree. His degree is in math and engineering. Is a well-respected speaker on the circuit, and we are thrilled to have Richard join us as the editor of HPC Wire.
Boy, that makes me sound pretty good. Thanks very much, Tom. It's really great to join the team, and I'm looking forward to this.
Well, as excited as I am to be doing a podcast with you, Richard, I hope you won't mind if I thank my previous anchor, Michael Feldman, for doing, I think, just north of 200 episodes with us. I'm glad to see Michael still be on at Green Computing. That's fantastic. Well, Richard, thanks very much for joining us on this special edition. And like we were saying before, People to Watch is a really exciting one for us. Obviously, you and Michael and Tom are all People to Watch, but why don't you get us to our formal list for HPC Wire's People to Watch for 2013?
Sure. Thanks, Addison. The first on the list is Jay Boisseau. He's at TAC, the Texas Advanced Computing Center. And he actually created TAC in 2001, which is one of the world's leading advanced computing centers in the world. Addison, why don't you give us an idea of why he's on the list this year?
Well, we're great friends of TAC. I like dropping in there every time I'm in Austin. This has just been a center of increasing importance and relevance. And, of course, a big reason why it's a center to watch and why Jay is a person to watch in 2013 is with the completion of the installation of the Stampede supercomputer, which, of course, is not only a huge Dell supercomputer, very important for that company in the supercomputing space, but maybe most notably it's the first big production supercomputer based on the Intel Phi the Intel Xeon Phi processors. So with all the attention we've had around accelerators, GPU computing, to look at Stampede coming in at 10 petaflops now using the Xeon Phi processors, absolutely something we're going to watch.
You know, Jay's a great selection. You know, he's one of the young new luminaries in high performance computing. And I say that, and at the same time, he has had a very long legacy in high performance computing, dating back to the days of the time when he was at the San Diego Supercomputing Center. He indeed is one of the major leaders in our space globally.
Yeah, he's been on the list before, a great recognition there. I think we also previously recognized Melissa Fratkin at TAC for her work with the STAR program. He's got great bench strength down there. Dan Stanzione is also an outstanding guy. So Jay is not only great himself, he's the head of a great team and definitely someone to watch for 2013.
Yeah, it's an incredible organization. So next up, we have Diane Bryant at Intel. So she's General Manager and Vice President for the Data Center and Connected Systems Group for Intel. And she's got a lot of work to do this year. What do you think, Addison?
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, being part of this Data Center Connected Systems Group, that's a great role for her. We've seen her in presentations around the Intel Xeon launches. And, you know, extremely credible background, but has a lot to do with Intel, both in the chip and beyond the chip. You know, we're talking about these processor wars that have been heating up all through 2012. The success of Xeon Phi is going to be incredibly important to this company going forward.
Yeah, it's fun to watch Diane. You know, she's one of three women on our list this year. Intel has made quite a few acquisitions this recently.
Well, those acquisitions are also part of why Diane's work is going to be so interesting to watch. You know, not only are they working on these democratization initiatives to try to get HPC into the hands of more users in industry, but beyond that, you've got these acquisitions that Intel has had that really play into their exascale initiatives, and in particular fabric integration. When we look at the Cray hardware futures, the InfiniBand business from QLogic, their acquisition of Fulcrum, which goes back to the end of 2011, how they integrate the fabric with microprocessors is going to be a very interesting topic and a very important one for Diane's group, this DCSG group at Intel.
Yeah, it's absolutely going to be critical for the system on a chip technology going into the data centers. And this is the first time Intel's had any real competition in the data centers. Assume this goes forward as people think it might. It's had 92% of the market. So this is going to be a big change fighting off that challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Great point.
And then we have Donna Crawford at Lawrence Livermore National Lab, and that's the home of the Sequoia system. And Addison, why don't you tell us a little bit about her?
Well, I've known Donna many years, and I've had her on my panels at trade shows, a great, well-recognized expert voice in the high-performance computing community. And now, of course, with Sequoia, you know, now housing one of the most powerful supercomputers in the world yet again. So that alone is a reason to watch. But really, what I think about with Donna is how the Department of Energy is moving forward with their exascale plans, their pre-exascale systems. Michael and I were just talking about the plans for 100 petaflop deployments in last week's podcast, and Donna's going to be right in the center of all of that.
Yeah, Donna is another one of the women on our list this year. This is a special pick. Donna is not only brilliant, as a person, she's absolutely lovely. In 2002, Donna was on the People to Watch list, making her the only woman to be honored on our list twice. She has many, many accolades and is a true leader in high-performance computing.
You know, well-deserved, definitely someone to watch this year and every year.
Yeah, absolutely. Taking on the big issues, things like global climate change and clean energy and biodefense. And she's got a lot of work also.
Also, another one of the very instrumental people in terms of talking about how to bring supercomputing technologies to U.S. industry. She's in the middle of all that as well.
That's right. Then we've got Bill Gropp at the Parallel Computing Institute. He's got a lot of interesting things going on there.
Well, Parallel Computing Institute, University of Illinois, obviously puts him right in the middle of the supercomputer space. But then most notably for this year is that he's the general chair heading into SC13. So all of his work that he does in parallel programming models with MPI, MPitch, all the libraries around that, that's really the most interesting topic to me in terms of what we need to get over for the efficient use of exascale. I mean, people will talk about power consumption or interconnects and the like, and these are all significant issues. But for me, you know, let's say that this system exists. How are you going to use it and program it? To me, that's the most fascinating topic, and that's where Bill's work really is. And I'm excited to see how he brings a lot of those themes into SC13 as the general chair.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to follow Bill this year. You know, one is he comes with a pretty high level pedigree. You know, he's one of the many notables who have come out of Stanford with a PhD in computer science. But I think he makes the list for a couple of major reasons. One, you know, he's, of course, as you mentioned, Addison, he's the general chair of SC13, which
25th anniversary. Yeah.
And it's the 25th year, 25th anniversary. It's quite a significant role to play in our industry. And two, it's going to be an interesting path that he takes and some strategies that he takes coming off of last year and the scaling back of the DOE lab. So it'll be interesting to see what Bill does to change that direction and impact it in a positive way. Looking forward to it.
Personally, I think those DOE labs will be back. Their presences might get right-sized from what they were before, but it's going to be important that we keep seeing these DOE labs at supercomputing. I think with Bill as the general chair, I bet they'll be there.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. I always thought it was great that he thinks we ought to stop talking about exascale and just start talking about what we can do with more power in the supercomputers and don't worry so much about benchmarks.
Or the next power of 1,000. It's an interesting point.
Yeah, right. Okay, and then we have Sumit Gupta, general manager of Tesla GPU Computing Group. That is another company that's been doing extremely well and has a lot of work ahead this year.
Yeah, Sumit Gupta has been a great longtime friend of HPC Wire Soundbite. We've had him as a guest on our program before. Obviously, we've been tracking the adoption of GPU computing as a major trend across the industry, and it's been fun watching him really blossom in this role. As GPU computing has taken off, so has Sumit's career. We can remember going back to when Andy Keen was the general manager of that group, and back when Andy left, Michael and I were on the air theorizing about this being one of the most important open jobs in the HPC space right now. Sumit was named the active GM while they conducted a pretty thorough search, and it didn't take NVIDIA very long before they realized that they had the right guy already in the chair. Sumit's been doing a great job as not only GPU computing continues to get adopted, but we've seen the growth of things like the GPU Technology Conference, which is coming up again in March. He's always a pleasure for us to work with.
Yeah, NVIDIA has, over the most recent years, significantly reshaped and changed the CPU landscape in high-performance computing in a very exciting way. And Sumit has been a part of that transition and a part of leading that direction in NVIDIA all along. He is, you know, he's one of the young guns in the community and is going to be great to watch in this, you know, finally defined role as GM of the Tesla group and NVIDIA.
He also brings a really global perspective for someone his age. He's in the U.S. now, but he's lived in Belgium, he's lived in India, he's lived in Kuwait. He really understands a lot of the global issues around HPC.
I wish I could make all that all those travel arrangements myself. NVIDIA has just been such an incredible company and just such a rising force in the industry.
Yeah, well, we'll watch. We'll continue to watch how the software tool space develops around this. A lot of the what we're talking about with Intel, NVIDIA, AMD are going to come down to tools, and Submit has that squarely in his crosshairs for 2013.
Right. Next, we have John Gustafson from AMD. He recently joined the company from Intel, which is a very interesting move. And his job is make sure he can keep AMD increasingly relevant in the space. And he's been making some interesting changes in AMD's processor group. Why don't you give us a little bit?
Yeah, John is another guy I've known for a long time. Not only is he a long-time processor and algorithm luminary guy, he does everything with parallelism. Gustafson's Law, of course, is named for him. He also shares my passion for puzzles, so we've compared notes on that from time to time. But you know, an interesting puzzle he's going after now is with regards to parallelism at AMD. As we move into the multi-core era, the heterogeneous era, he looks at algorithms and how they can be better parallelized. There's a lot going on with AMD right now, and you know, as much as we've talked about Intel and NVIDIA, this is a critical year for AMD, and John might be the right guy to reinvigorate AMD as part of the discussion.
Yeah, indeed, Addison. John is the right guy. You know, I've known John since the early 80s, dating back to his time when he formulated his infamous counterargument to Amdahl's Law, which now bears his name, Gustafson's Law. He was also the inaugural Gordon Bell Award recipient, which is a very prestigious award in our community. He's just brilliant. He's one of the luminaries in our space who's absolutely brilliant. There's some interesting things about John that I think a lot of people don't know, and that is he's an accomplished keyboard musician, both on the piano and the harpsichord, and he built a harpsichord with his own hands.
You know, John gets more and more interesting every time I talk about him. I will watch him any year.
Yeah, building harpsichord. Now, that's a true engineer for you.
There you go.
And we also talked about Intel buying these fabric companies. And, of course, you know, AMD got C-Micro, and they're going to be doing interesting stuff with that.
That's right. You know, this processor space is as important as it gets in 2013. You know, not to say HPC is all about the processors. Of course, you know, we've always analyzed the full ecosystem, all the technologies, the interconnects, the storage systems, the software. But the dynamics in the processor space right now are undeniable.
Yeah, it's just going to be an incredible year. Then we have Bill Kramer from NCSA. He's Deputy Project Manager for the Sustained Petascale Blue Waters Project. Why don't you tell us a little bit about him, Addison?
Well, you know, Blue Waters, just starting there, was the most controversial supercomputer of this generation of the 10-plus petaflop systems that came out, obviously with the history of IBM bidding on it, then backing out, then Cray coming in. Who's going to manage all of this? And Bill Kramer, out of anybody, has the chops to do it. He's managed, this is now the 20th major supercomputer that he's been in charge of, and he's done a lot of them on novel architectures or things that are different in the industry. He's not afraid to go a different direction from everybody else, and he's already saw him putting his mark on Blue Waters with the very bold decision not to submit top 500 results with the Blue Waters system last November.
You know, Bill is definitely one that we want to watch. He is a no-nonsense leader. He's a no-nonsense visionary. You know, he was the heavy negotiator with IBM that displaced IBM and moved Cray in into the Blue Waters strategy. And you're absolutely right, Addison. He was one of those leaders in at a major facility that made a decision not to participate in the top 500. A clear sign of the character and vision that Bill Kramer has.
We'll see how that continues to play out. Obviously, we want to see good results coming off of that Blue Waters machine. I think Bill's your guy.
Yeah, definitely. And then we have Henry Markram. He's at EPFL, and I won't try to pronounce the whole thing because my French isn't
good enough. École Polytechnique Fédérale de Lausanne.
Okay, there you go.
May we.
Good. And he founded the Blue Brain Project there. He's director of that project now. Also founded the Brain Mind Institute. And that's some fascinating stuff, Addison.
It really is. Now, you talk about people to watch for 2013. Henry Markram, in particular, is a person to watch this week. Blue Brain Project is a fascinating area for me, which he was the founder of that in 2005, going after brain research. But in real time now, that was one of the pilots for the European Commission flagship initiative, the Future and Emerging Technology Initiatives. And the follow-on to Blue Brain, the Human Brain Project, was one of the six pilot projects that got funded. The EC is now looking to select a smaller number of those to get additional funding. And we've all got our eyes on the Human Brain Project with a press announcement that's coming up on Monday, to see this coming Monday, January 28th, to see what the future of the Human Brain Project is. So definitely something we're going to want to watch right away.
Oh, indeed, Addison. You know, brain research is one of the most exciting research areas in high-performance computing, and is heating up significantly. And Henry and his team are global research leaders in that field.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Tom. As analysts, we sometimes get to talk about some of the exciting areas in supercomputing research to the non-HPC-initiated crowd. And one that I love to talk about is the notion of brain research mapping the human brain. It's not an area where you can do a lot of physical research on live human brains, right? But if you can simulate all the neural connections, build that map, it can provide a lot of insights in areas of different types of brain dysfunction, from anything from autism to anxiety disorder to schizophrenia. Any of these brain disorders, hopefully you get better understanding of. And projects like the Human Brain Project is going to take us a mile in that direction.
Yeah, and trying to simulate the working of a human brain is a pretty ambitious goal as well.
Depends on which human brain, I suppose. Mine might be simple.
That's possible. Okay, we'll move on to Cynthia McIntyre at the Council on Competitiveness, and she's working with DOE grant now to figure out how supercomputing can benefit competitiveness in U.S. industries.
That's right. Well, the council's been involved in a lot of these initiatives, you know, due to their great membership that they have with luminary companies in U.S. industry. They were first involved in the push for what the term that the council coined with the missing middle, and pushing the adoption of high-performance computing into the entry-level and mid-range for U.S. manufacturers. That led to the NDEMIC program, the National Digital Engineering Manufacturing Consortium program, which is now in a pilot phase, now moving on from there with the new DOE initiative to study a three-year study of the benefits of exascale computing to U.S. industry. Cynthia, who's got a great technical background, is going to be right in the middle of all these things.
Yeah, the initiative is very exciting, and it's heating up. You know, the last two administrations in both the State of the Union and the inauguration speeches had dedicated a reasonable amount of real estate in those speeches to increasing U.S. competitiveness and enhancing workforce initiatives by deploying advanced computing technologies in manufacturing. So there is going to be a great deal of activity in that space, in that realm, and the council has been in the center of the eye of that activity, and to a great degree led by Cynthia. You know, she has her PhD in science and out of MIT in physics, and so she's a good pick to watch next year.
Well, I agree with you. There's been a lot of mention of these things. There's been a disappointing amount of activity thus far, but if anyone can get it going, it might be some of these studies. So that's why we're very keen to see what some of the outcomes of these things are going forward. You know, I trust with this big grant that we can start doing some actual research around this space and what initiatives actually need to be funded and carried out.
Your research has been critical in moving this space forward, Addison, and the work you guys have done in this space. And my intention is not to sit here and plug you and your research, but quite frankly.
I don't mind. Go ahead, Tom. That's okay.
What are friends for, right? You know, it has been critical in providing us some, you know, headlights looking forward and how we address and the initiative and who has been actually utilizing the tools and so forth. So it's going to be a good year.
Yeah, and we'll go on to Thomas Sterling at Indiana University, formerly with LSU, and he's professor of informatics and computing at Indiana University. Give us a little bit of background on him, Addison.
Yeah, Tom, you know, I was surprised to look back and realize that Tom actually hadn't been on this list before. I was dead certain. I was looking back to see it had been on it two or three times before, but this is actually the first time he's been on People to Watch. And the reason I say that is I feel like he's someone you could watch any year. Since moving over to Indiana University, he's really kept up a lot of his very important initiatives in terms of how we get more scalable models in these concurrent systems, in these heterogeneous systems. It's very important topics right now. But what I like best about Tom Sterling is that he's out there with an opinion, and he's going to let you know what he thinks, and it's an expert opinion. He's not gun shy about saying that, you know, this is the way he thinks we ought to go, and it's important to have those strong opinions out there in the industry.
Well, first, let me just say he's a great guy. You know, he's affectionately known in the space and the industry as Tron, T-R-O-N, and he actually uses that moniker in some of his personal email addresses. And he's just lovely to be around, in addition to being one of the brilliant minds in our space. You know, we focus on production systems. We have to have tools that get real work done. But we also have to have these visionary leaders that are taking us into the next, you know, to the next tier, to that next level of capability and capacity. And I'm speaking of Exascale, and Tron is one of the guys at the front, at the point of the spear, you know, moving us in that direction.
And it's an area he's been in before. He's well known as one of the original co-conspirators that brought us Beowulf clusters. I recently did a interview with him for HPC Wire just before the SC12 conference about some of the history of Beowulf. Another important piece that he had in HPC Wire over the course of the last year was his editorial on why he thought we'd never reach zettaflops, which is, I think, one of your most widely read pieces of the year.
Indeed.
Yeah. It's great to have somebody that really says what they mean. Of course, with Beowulf, we know that he puts on one of the best parties at the supercomputing conference, right?
That's right. The Beowulf Bash is always a lot of fun.
Right. And then, of course, Peter Ungaro is our next luminary here, president and CEO of Cray. And boy, Cray has had an incredible year.
They really have. We were talking about that coming out of supercomputing, what a big show Cray had, and how much new news, capped off, of course, by their acquisition of Apro, which really does a nice complementary job to their product line. We've had that well covered before. But looking forward, into what's Cray going to do with big data and YARC data, what role are they going to play in the next generation of petascale systems, tens of petaflops, hundreds of petaflops on the path to exascale. The balance of Cray versus IBM there is something that we've talked about in a recent previous podcast. Cray just continues to be fascinating to watch with Pete at the helm.
If you look at what a CEO is you know, his principal role or is measured by, it's to increase value of the organization for its shareholders. And if you look at Pete's tenure when he took over Cray and where it is today, in 2008, the Cray stock was at, you know, just above $5. And as of last week, shares were trading at over $18. So, you know, aside from all of the things that Pete has done, he is serving his shareholders extremely well.
Yeah, that's stock price.
That's just great, you know, job security for Pete. My only disappointment with Pete Ungaro is his just sheer lack of courage of joining me on the golf course. We played one time, and I can't get that guy to join me again. What does that say about Pete Ungaro?
Pete, the gauntlet has been dropped here. That sounds like a $5 wolf tournament coming up.
Show yourself, Ungaro.
Okay, the challenge is out there. I wanted to add very quickly also that you mentioned the stock price. It's now at the highest it's been in 7 years, which is since you took over as CEO. And with the Appro acquisition, the stock just went way up on the day that was announced. Of course, it was also the day they were announcing great earnings for the company. So I'm sure that entered into it a little bit.
That entered into it. Another reason to watch them going forward is I want to see what they do on the storage side, not just big data, but their whole Xyratex OEM, the Synexion line. That's going to be important for Cray also.
Right. Then we have got last on our list is Wayman.
Last only alphabetically.
That's right.
Only alphabetically is he last.
That's right. He's got two high letters in his name. That's Wayman. Right. Jung, and a lot of people are familiar with the NUDT in China, Tianhe 1A supercomputer,
right.
But may not be quite as familiar with what Tsinghua University is doing. So tell us a little bit about that, Addison.
Well, right, and as much as NUDT has had a lot of the top headlines coming out of China for supercomputing, Zhang and his team at Tsinghua have been doing a lot of internal development. Zhang has been involved in deploying grid services technology, developing CPUs, the Thump 107. He's designed mass storage network systems. Now, you can pick out guys who develop different things, but because he's in so many of these different areas, the reason I think that's so noteworthy right now is we've theorized that as China moves forward on its petascale and exascale initiatives, there might be an increasing reliance on technologies that are developed domestically for them. So to have a technologist who's in so many different areas, these could very well be technologies that we see deployed, developed in 2013, but I would make him a person to watch for the decade ahead,
mm-hmm.
right? And, you know, watch what happens with these technologies, see if you don't start seeing them deployed in Chinese exascale systems.
The investments being made in China and the commitment to high-performance computing, exascale computing in the geo are and will be even more significant, and he certainly will be one of the people that will be leading them in that direction. But in addition to that, you know, he's also very engaging. I understand that his students did really well at the ISC Cluster Challenge.
Yeah, great point, Tom. We set up the cluster challenges at these major supercomputing shows, and his students won the overall performance. Tsinghua University won overall performance for the student cluster challenge at ISC. I think the other Chinese university, NUDT, had best LINPACK performance, but Tsinghua won the overall crown. So if that's indicative of the future of Chinese supercomputing coming out of that university, then Zhang's doing a pretty nice job with his students and with his technology.
Yeah, it's amazing what's going on there these days. It's not something that most people hear about, what's going on in China and in these areas. But that completes our list. So, Addison?
Tom, Richard, you're to be commended again on 12 excellent picks, people to watch for 2013. My favorite HPC Wire special edition of the year, and always a pleasure to talk to you, Tom. Richard, I look forward to talking to you a lot more often.
Absolutely. Thanks very much.
Thank you both. Cheers to 2013.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite. Got a question or comment? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.